Okay. So to take our discussion further about mitzvah srichas kavana and its fascinating passageways and detours and mysterious aspects. So we started phrasing the question yesterday as one of multiple questions. So we talk about mitzvah srichas kavana, do they require kavana or not? And as we noted, any one of those words, mitzvah, srichos, kavana, all are subject to multiple interpretations. And we'll see that play out. And just to quickly recap some of the levels, so to work backwards because it's easiest. So kavana, what does kavana mean? Does kavana mean awareness? Does it mean intent? Does it mean appreciation for the themes of the mitzvah specifically? Does it mean less than all that? Does it mean awareness that you're doing something in the first place? Any one of those are possible, and then it flips the whole question. Does it mean you need A but not B, B but not C, you do need, you don't need, how exactly should the question be understood is going to depend, and how it's going to be answered is going to be very much dependent on what does the word mean? What does it mean, kavana? That's one aspect. Trichos, what does trichos mean? Does trichos mean to be yotzei a mitzvah? Does it mean to get schar for a mitzvah? Does it mean to accomplish everything that the mitzvah requires? Does it mean lechachila? Does it mean b'dieved? Does it mean that kavana affects it at all? All of those are open possibilities. And mitzvos. So is mitzvos one general category where everything is going to be the same? So on the one hand, a little bit sounds like that from the fact that the Gemara asks it as kind of an open question. On the other hand, the fact that we have particular details and specific mitzvot, which have their own unique discussions and maybe have conflicting conclusions, well, lead us to think there might be differences. And does it matter whether we're talking about mitzvot d'oraisa, mitzvot d'rabbanan, etc., etc.? So all of those require further explanation. And where we left off yesterday, we started noting that there's an additional level of questioning to bring to the table. So if we were to say, let's say, for example, the view of most of the Rishonim, and we said this whole question is very much still an open question, but the majority of Rishonim seem to interpret the conclusion of the Gemara, la halacha to be that mitzvos ein srichos kavan. And yesterday we focused on maybe the most direct of the many sugyas, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that gave those two hypotheticals. One, somebody who eats matzah because he's forced to by these intruders, and somebody who blows shofar for musical benefit, the tekei l'shir. So in both cases, it sounds like the conclusion is that mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, that both of those work. And that we only needed to be told about shofar too, because you could have thought that zichron trua puts it on a different level. So if we take this position for a moment, mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, so where we left off yesterday was really to start the discussion, what does that mean? Does that mean literally, kavana is irrelevant. Ein srichos kavana, it just doesn't matter. Kavanos and mitzvos are two separate things, and mitzvos exist independent of kavana. Or does it mean that no, you don't have to supply kavana because the kavana is there, or whatever kavana accomplishes there? But it doesn't really mean that it is immune to any kavana considerations. And we gave the example, the comparison. Let's say if you were to buy a product in the store and it says no batteries necessary. So does that mean that it literally batteries play no role? It just doesn't need batteries? It works without batteries? Or maybe it means batteries included. So it's not necessary for you to add batteries. But if you were to take the batteries out, then that would be a problem, because it does need batteries, it just doesn't need you to supply the batteries. So that's a major discussion in the Rishon, because when we say mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, if that's your position, so does that mean that it's completely irrelevant, and no matter what you say or do, you cannot knock the kavana out of this mitzvah? So, for example, if you saw the Ritva in Rosh Hashanah, he quotes the Ra'ah to this effect, that afilu omed v'tzoveach, that even if you are standing and screaming that I am not interested in this mitzvah, it's still not going to undo the effectiveness of the mitzvah. The mitzvah will be fulfilled if you are following otherwise all the rules and everything else is in place. It doesn't matter that you are screaming, I'm not interested, the mitzvah is still good. So that is really the minority view in the Rishonim. And a lot of Rishonim do assume that negative kavana does work. And there are some interesting proofs. So some of the Rishonim just say it straight out. If you had a chance to see, I know the list is long, so it's hard to catch everything initially. But some of the Rishonim just say like that, that if you have negative kavana, we call it kavana hafachis, kavana lalatzes, so that will negate the mitzvah. The Torah brings different Rishonim on this point. Some point to a Tosfos and Brachos, which is interesting. The Tosfos is interesting, and the inference from Tosfos is interesting. So I added it to the list this morning. If you had a chance to see, it's Tosfos at the end of the first parak. Tosfos and Brachos and Daf Yud Beis and Manalev, which is right before the Gemara has a discussion, Mitzvah Srichos Kavana, the beginning of the second parak of Brachos. And right before that, the end of the first parak, in a completely different context, Tosfos brings it up. Because the Gemara talks about somebody who misunderstands what he's about to drink and therefore makes the wrong bracha. So he's about to drink wine, he thinks it's beer, he's about to drink beer, he thinks it's wine. So what if he has the wrong bracha for this item? So the Gemara talks about that. And the Rishonim debate what exactly we mean, that he actually said wrong words, or he just had wrong intent, he thought he was going to make a shahako and he made a bar priya gafen or something like that. So Tosfos brings up the issue, well, who cares if he thought the wrong thing? Mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, which is a very interesting thing to bring in there, because it's not obvious that's the same kind of kavana. Right? The intention to say a specific bracha, to line that up with these kavana discussions, one could have thought it's a different usage of the word. But nonetheless, that's what Tosfos brings into the conversation. So Tosfos over there says, well, even if you say mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, that's if you're just not thinking anything. But if you're thinking something else, that would be a problem. In other words, there's a difference between no kavana and the wrong kavana. No kavana, okay, so then the mitzvah is valid. But wrong kavana, that will push out what needs to be there. So it's interesting on a lot of levels, that Tosfos. And Rav Yosef Engel has an essay about this in his sefer Asfin Daraisa, Simin Chav Gimel, Kval Chav Gimel, as he calls it. And there, the whole piece is about this question: does negative kavana exist? And that idea, he says, you see, starts off talking about this Tosfos. You see from this Tosfos that negative kavana indeed does negate a mitzvah. That it's one thing to have no kavana, that's fine. But to have the wrong kavana, or to have the opposite kavana, that will indeed defuse the mitzvah. So that would put him in a camp with a lot of other Rishonim, that negative kavana is a real thing. While according to the Ra'ah, and maybe a few others, negative kavana has no impact. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? That makes sense? So this has a major part to play lahalacha, because we started to explain a little bit yesterday that this is not talking necessarily about somebody who's anti-religious, who says, I don't care, not only am I not going to make the effort to do mitzvos, but even if everything I do happens to line up with a mitzvah, I don't want it. I don't want to have any connection to mitzvos. That's not who we're talking about here. Maybe we're talking about somebody who actually is very religious and wants to do mitzvahs perfectly and doesn't want to lose it before he has it in perfect circumstances. So if he's doing something which could count as a mitzvah, he wants it to not count as a mitzvah so that he should be able to still have the full opportunity later. And we mentioned yesterday, it's very practical nowadays with Sfiras HaOmer. So a lot of people would prefer to count when they're 100% sure it's night, let's say. So they're going to wait until it's fully dark, according to as many opinions as they can wait. But somebody asks them before that, what night is it tonight? So they don't want to say tonight is 6, because that could suffice to fulfill the mitzvah. And therefore, that's going to stop them from being able to count later with a bracha. Because once they've already done it, it's not justifiable to make a bracha again. Right, now the actual details, I mentioned this morning, the actual lumdus and details of counting sphira have a whole much more foundation to discuss. So hopefully over the next few days we'll find an opportunity to give some more background on Sfiras HaOmer, especially because it's both relevant to us every day at the moment, and it also impacts on sukkahs like this. So there's more to say about that. But on the surface, this is one example of how this could be relevant. And it comes up in a lot of places. So for example, the Chassam Sofer, in a few places in his Tshuvas, writes that we have Kiddush Friday night. So we discussed earlier in the year how Kiddush is an example of a mitzvah d'oraisa, which midrabanan a lot was added onto. Right? We talked about that at the beginning of the year. Let's say if you make Kiddush, not b'mokum suda. So do you at least fulfill a mitzvah min haTorah? So the Chassam Sofer discusses that when you go to shul Friday night, it could be that you would be yotzei Kiddush min haTorah with either davening ma'ariv itself, maybe that's enough to be yotzei Kiddush min haTorah, that was the position of the Magen Avraham, or if they make Kiddush in shul, it's even more likely maybe that you would be yotzei Kiddush on a level min haTorah, but you wouldn't be yotzei midrabanan because you're not at your dinner table yet. So you'll have a split between the mitzvah min haTorah and the mitzvah midrabanan, which is not ideal. So the Chassam Sofer recommends that you have negative kavana, that you intend that whatever is happening in shul, even if theoretically it satisfies the requirements for Kiddush, you should not be yotzei with that. So that when you get home to your dinner table, you are still fully obligated in Kiddush. So there are a number of scenarios where somebody might want to have negative kavana for a mitzvah, for pro-religious reasons. Now, if such a thing exists, so then that brings us to a fancier category, which is somewhat disputed, but the Shulchan Aruch does seem to recognize the concept of a conditional mitzvah. Can you have a conditional mitzvah? If you do a certain act that would qualify as a mitzvah, but here it's more complicated that maybe you want it to count, maybe you don't. It's going to depend on what happens afterwards. So can you do a mitzvah conditionally? So let's go back to our sphere example. Okay, let's say you go to shul for ma'ariv and it's right after shkia. Or maybe it's even earlier than that. Maybe it's before shkia, it's after plaga mincha. It's a Friday in the summertime. Still sphere. And you want to count then, because you'll remember at that time, because in shul they're going to remind you. But you'd really rather wait till it's really dark, so you can be yotzei more properly. But you're worried that maybe when it comes to later at night, I'll forget. There's no one around to remind me. So can you do as follows? Can you count the way they're counting in shul earlier? And say, I'm doing this with conditional kavana, that if I remember later at the more perfect time, so then this doesn't count at all. But if it turns out that I forget later, and this is the only thing that I have for me, then this should count as a mitzvah. So it's another level of complication. Is there such a thing as conditional kavana? What do you think? So it sounds like at least some of the poskim, such as the Shulchan Aruch and others, do accept the concept of conditional kavanah. So this is a chiddush on top of negative kavanah. Right? You have to first accept that negative kavanah exists. And then if there's such a thing as negative kavanah, so then you can build a bigger chiddush on top of that and say it's conditional. It's only negative if circumstances turn out a certain way. So another example, let's say you're going to a minyan Shabbos morning and you're not sure if they're going to make Zman Kriya Shema or not. So you could say Kriya Shema before Shacharis. But the Vilna Gaon and others held that you really have to have Kriya Shema in its right place, in Tzmichas Gula and Tefillah, Bizmana. So ideally, you'd rather not be Yotzei Kriya Shema before Shacharis. You'd rather have it in its proper format with Tzmichas Gula Tefillah. But on the other hand, you don't want to miss it completely, and you're not sure if the shul will get up to it. So you want to say Kriya Shema before B'tnai. That if the shul gets up to it in time, so then this doesn't count as Kriya Shema, it's just Psukim, I'm just learning. If we don't get up to it in time, it should count as the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So you have a number of examples of that, of conditional kavanah. So conditional kavanah is only going to make sense if you first accept the concept of negative kavanah, and then you say even more than that, that you can make it conditional. So whether negative kavanah exists is a discussion. It's going to depend on how you understand mitzvah Rechus kavanah. So you can probably get to negative kavanah in two ways, the concept of negative kavanah in two ways. Either you could say mitzvos tzrichos kavanah. So if I believe that mitzvos need kavanah, so then maybe it's in my control whether to have kavanah or not. And therefore, I could have negative kavanah. Or you could say that no, mitzvos ain't tzrichos kavanah, but still negative kavanah works, because it's a default premise that there is kavanah, but I can contradict that premise. So if I don't say anything, fine, I don't need kavanah. But negative kavanah is worse than no kavanah. So two different models in which negative kavanah could exist. Either because we do need kavanah, or we don't, but what we really mean by saying we don't is that the default is that it's there. Okay, so far as we have this complicated stuff. So everybody with me? Yeah, hi.
For the first one, when you hold it needs kavana, wouldn't you not need negative concept because the lack of kavana would be problematic?
So wouldn't you need say if you say
if you hold that you do need kavana.
Right.
So like there's no difference between negative kavana and the lack.
Right, but it might mean that it's in your control. You know, so you can decide whether to have kavana or not. Right, so maybe mitzvah srichas kavana, so therefore I have to choose the kavana option. So if I choose the negative kavana option, so maybe that means that that's an example of not fulfilling the standard of mitzvah srichas kavana. Meaning there's a version where negative kavana works, both in the sentence mitzvah srichos and mitzvah zain srichos. Because mitzvah srichos, then I can say, okay, I choose not to have it. Or mitzvah zain srichos, I can say it only means by default, but if I say negative, it undoes it. Now, I'll say a little bit more about this default idea. So some explain this using the phrase stama lishma. And just to say a little bit more about that, I put it at the end of the Makoros yesterday because I figured we should see everything else first. But the first Mishnah in Zvachim. If you ever learn Zvachim, so God willing, you should learn Kol Torah Kula and learn Kachin. So the first Mishnah in Zvachim starts off with the idea that introduces Stama Lishma. It says, Kol HaZvachim Shnizbachu Shalom Lishma Niksher, that Korbanos that are offered that are not Lishma are still kosher. And then the Gemara goes on to explain that Shalom Lishma means active Shalom Lishma, for not for the sake of the Korban. The Gemara explains what Lishma means. But if you don't say anything one way or another, so then Stama is Lishma. The Stam of a Korban is that it is fulfilling this condition of Lishma. So that idea of Stama Lishma, many invoke that in this context also. And they say that that's what we mean. We mean that mitzvos are stama lishma. By default, they are with the right intent. And that's why you don't have to actively have kavan. But if you cancel the default, if you override the default, you go into the factory setting and then you change it, so then that's worse than nothing. And that's not going to count. So that is a phrase many bring into this. One of the most well-known discussions was part of a big controversy. If you know anything about the history, if you know anything, maybe if you're a student of the history of Hasidus, so you might be aware of this issue, that the Noda Behuda, Chazkel Landau, was a big misnaget. He very much opposed certain aspects of Hasidus. So one of the details that he objected to was the recitation of the Shem Yichud before performing a mitzvah. And so the idea that you should declare that you're doing a mitzvah for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, etc. So the Noda Behuda had a number of objections to that. And one of the objections that he expresses in his tshuvos is that mitzvos are stama lishma. He says that the default is that when you do a mitzvah, it is l'shem kutshubrichu shrite, that it's for the sake of God's mitzvos. And to all of a sudden make a policy that you have to declare it, so that's going to imply that it's no longer a stama lishma, that it's only lishma if you make this recitation, and that isn't our default understanding. That was one of the objections that he raised to this whole idea of l'shem yichud. So there is some using of this phrase, stama lishma, in this context. I should point out, and this is something we'll probably have to draw upon later, that it's not obvious that that's the right usage, or that that is really connected. That, as many achronim point out, that lishma and kavana are not necessarily the same thing at all. And that goes to one of our first questions: what does the word kavana mean in the sentence mitzvah srichos kavana? So the idea of lishma is something that we find in certain distinct areas of halacha. So the Mishnah Zvachim that we talked about, that Mishnah is referring to karbanos. There's a halacha that karbanos have to be prepared and offered lishma, offered with the direct designation of all of its purposes. It's a big discussion, we've shown him exactly how much is included in that lishma specifically, but that's a part of what a korban requires. And we have certain other mitzvos that have a similar concept. Tzitzis have to be lishma. Well, matzah, we know, has to be made lishma. That may or may not be a parallel idea. And stam, sefer Torah, mitzvah, sefer Torah, mezuzah, tefillin, those have to be made lishma. So that's one kind of idea, that a mitzvah item has to be prepared and dedicated a certain way. And mitzvah srichos kavana might be a whole different idea, that the individual who is performing a mitzvah, with an item or without an item, has to have intent or awareness. So it's not necessarily obvious that kavana and lishma are the same thing. But there are those who put them together and there are those who don't. So you should just be aware that the notion of stama lishma that's being borrowed here from lishma by karbanos, one could argue just how much it's really a precise usage. Okay, so far so good? All right, this is somewhat complicated stuff. So the premise that mitzvos might be preloaded with kavana, so that's an interesting idea to explore. And that might mean that even if you say mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, it just means that you don't have to supply the kavana. But you could mess it up. That if you were to declare a negative kavana, that could change the defaults and mess up the faculty settings. And the Ra'ah, as we saw, the Ra'ah says not that way. Right? The Ra'ah says that afilu omei v'tzoveach, even if you're yelling and screaming, I'm not interested, doesn't matter, the mitzvah is still good. So that's an interesting position, which we'll have to come back to. It's also interesting to keep in mind that this is the second minority view of the Ra'ah that we've mentioned in 2 days. Right, we mentioned him yesterday with another interesting position, that when we say mitzvahs don't need kavana, so here he's saying kind of, we want to call it a kula, meaning that the mitzvah is fulfilled with a lower strength, with a lower standard, we'll call that a kula. But yesterday he had an interesting requirement in the other direction. Right, what did we mention yesterday? You got a chance to see today, the Ra'ah is quoted in the Ran and Pesachim, and the Ran and Rosh Hashanah, he quotes in both places, that when the Gemara says that you can be Yotzei Matzah even if somebody forces you, right? So what is the Ra'ah's caveat to that? That you have to at least know that it's Pesach. And if you thought that it was weekday, thought it was Tom, a regular day, and you were just hungry, and you have no Pesach awareness, so then you would not be Yotzei without Kavanah. So it's an interesting requirement, and we'll have to say more about that. There is a good case to be made, as we'll see, that these two positions of the Ra'ah are linked, or are associated in some way. Again, the positions being that you have to at least know that it's Pesach, in the case of the Matzah, but that if you do, negative Kavanah doesn't make a difference. So it's interesting to know, if you look at the Pnei Yehoshua, so that could also be a part of the premise of what the Gemara is talking about when it goes on to talk about shofar. Right, so we noted yesterday that it's interesting that the example for matzah was a little unexpected, right, that you have somebody come in and compel you to eat matzah. And then when it comes to shofar, so then the example was changed. Right? It isn't that somebody came and forced you to blow shofar, but that hatokeya l'shir, you were blowing shofar for musical purposes. So as the Pnei Yehoshua notes, that if you keep that in the same framework, right, that we're assuming that the person knows it's Rosh Hashanah, which is not so obvious from the Gemara, but if you take that as a requirement, it changes the nature of the example. So think about this for a second. Right? If my question was, can somebody be Yotzei Shofar if he just blows a shofar for musical reasons? So that's one question. If the question is, the person knows it's Rosh Hashanah and blows a shofar only for musical reasons, how does that change things? What does that add to the equation? The fact that he isn't just interested in the music, but he also knows that it's Rosh Hashanah. What does that add into the mix? Yeah, Zach?
Well, if we're worried about how the mitzvah is actually impacting, like, your, you know, thought process, and then it's closer to the mitzvah, you know, it's Rosh Hashanah.
Is it closer, or maybe it's farther? That's what the Pnei Yeshua suggests. Why would it be farther?
Because you know you fail, but you're constantly not doing it.
Oh, right? So what is that closer to? Maybe negative kavana of some kind. Right? It's one thing. Somebody has no knowledge of anything, picks up a shofar, and thinks, oh, this is a cool instrument. And he happens to luck out because it's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, fine. But when he knows it's Rosh Hashanah, and he says, I don't care about your mitzvah, I'm going to blow the shofar only because of its musical appeal. So maybe it becomes negative kavanah. And then the Chiddush de Gemara is more. Right? That it's not just that you can be Yotzei Shofar without Kavanah. You can be Yotzei Shofar with negative Kavanah. So that's one way in which the Ra'ah's two positions would be linked. Right? That if the whole scenario is assuming that you actually know you're in the zone, you know that it's Pesach, you know that it's Rosh Hashanah, so then his position that negative kavanah doesn't change it actually becomes clearer from that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Because the scenario is now not just that you're innocently blowing a shofar for musical purposes, you're blowing a shofar davka in a way that you want to disassociate it from the mitzvah which you know about. Which is an interesting point to consider. And that may also, keep that in mind, because that may add a few other points to think about. Now, the idea of negative kavanah is also addressed in the Rishonim. It's also invoked in the Rishonim to address a problem which we talked about a little bit the first semester, so here's a little more synergy. So if you recall on Dav Zayin, so we talked about the din that appears there in our Gemara and Dav Zayin, that the bracha of a mitzvah has to be done over l'asiyasa. So that idea that a bracha has to be immediately before the mitzvah is performed, and we saw that it means it's a narrow zone, because not after the mitzvah is performed, over means before, but it means immediately before. So not over to over, not 2 steps before. So normally we want to be holding the mitzvah item in our hand and then make a bracha and then perform the mitzvah. So the Gemara in Sukkah raises the issue, literally, that picking up a lulav and esrog is going to be a problem. Because how do you get the bracha in before you have fulfilled the mitzvah? And as the Gemara says, nida afkei, nida agbei, nafik bei. As soon as you pick it up, you're Yotzei. That's all the daraisa of lulav and esrog requires. The halacha, we do a lot more, but on a basic daraisa level, that's all it requires. So how are you going to make the bracha immediately before the mitzvah? Once you pick it up, it's already then too late. And before you pick it up, it's too soon. So how do you get in the zone? Right? And that's something that the Rishonim have different approaches. What do we do? Now, what we know from practice is that we turn the esrog upside down to deal with that problem. And the assumption that mitzvos have to be performed derech gedilasa, it has to be in its proper position. So that's a way of addressing it, because you're holding the esrog, but you're not yet in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So therefore, you're able to get in that narrow space to thread the needle where you can still make the bracha immediately before, but you're not Yotzei until you flip it in the right place. So that's what we do. But the Rishonim have a few other suggestions. Not the only suggestion that you find in the Rishonim. Right, if you saw it, Tosfos and Sukkah talks about this. So one of the suggestions is negative kavanah. Why don't you just pick up the Levin Esrog with Kavanah Lo Latzeis, and then once you make the bracha, so then you'll turn on your Kavanah. So if you accept the concept of negative Kavanah, that should help for that problem. Now, what's interesting is that, among other things, is that we do seem, mostly Rishonim do seem to accept negative kavanah. Yet, that is not the preferred strategy. So why that is something that we will have to explain a little bit more. Okay, so this whole idea of there being a default, of there being a preloading of kavana into a mitzvah that is there under assumption, but you could cancel it out. So that has maybe some other interesting implications. So can you think of any distinctions, if you were to draw a line anywhere, and say certain mitzvahs have this preloaded kavana, and certain mitzvahs don't? So could you make any suggested distinctions? Do you think it's across the board all one way or another, all mitzvahs of all kinds have preloaded kavana, or they all don't? Or is there any distinction that might be applicable? Yeah?
I think a bracha is like a preloaded, you know.
A bracha is what? Sorry?
A bracha is like a preloaded, kavanah, because when you say a bracha, you're saying why you're doing it.
So okay, so the idea that a bracha may have a role for kavanah purposes is interesting, and some of the Rishonim do bring that up. And we discussed that a little bit at the first semester, that it could be that brachos do have that role, that they help guarantee kavana, right? And it's definitely true that if somebody is reciting a bracha on an action, then that seems to be a pretty clear indication that they have at least some level of kavana. So it could be that brachos do serve that purpose. And when you have a bracha, whether it was for that reason or not, it does seem to accomplish that. And some bring that up in the context of Sfiras HaOmer, and they say that if somebody asks you what day it is, then you just answer them. So the fact that you didn't make a bracha, that should show that you didn't have kavanah for it to be a mitzvah. Or the fact that you didn't answer them with how many days and how many weeks, which is normally how you would count Sfira, right? So if somebody were to ask you and you say, oh, it's 12, so if you really meant that to be a mitzvah, you would have said it's 12, which is 1 week and 5 days. That's a different detail. But the fact that you don't make the bracha, so maybe that should be taken as an indication of a negative kavanah. So you're definitely right that if somebody makes a bracha, so then that should be a pretty strong indication of not even preloaded kavanah, but actual kavanah. But let's say we don't have brachos, or say brachos aren't being recited for whatever reason. So does any mitzvah by its very nature lend itself more to preloaded kavanah or less to preloaded kavanah? Hi?
Maybe if a mitzvah has another reason you might be doing it.
Oh, okay. Very good. So keep that in mind, because that distinction is suggested and may explain some things. So, okay. So that's, so maybe some mitzvahs are more religious in nature, and we can assume will only be done for religious purposes. And some mitzvos are not necessarily so obviously for mitzvah purpose, and then maybe kavana is more necessary. All right, so hold on to that distinction, because it definitely might come up. What about mitzvos daraisa or mitzvos daraisa? You want to add another category?
The kavana says you need kavana, doesn't it?
Sorry? Well, the Gemara wants to know, do we need kavana or not? So what we're discussing is that it could be that even the opinion, which a lot of the Rishonim feel is the conclusion, that mitzvahs don't need kavana, that might only be because stam mitzvahs have kavana. The mitzvahs are kind of preloaded with kavana. But it doesn't mean that kavana is irrelevant. And if you change the factory settings somehow, then it would be no good. And maybe also there are mitzvos that don't fall into that, maybe. Maybe there are mitzvos that don't enter into that definition of preloaded kavanah. So what might they be? So what would you think about the following? Is there a distinction to be drawn on this issue between mitzvos d'oraisa and mitzvos d'rabbanan? What would you think?
I think
Or let's put it this way. If we were to say there is a distinction that one group requires kavanah and one group does not require kavanah, how would you line it up? Which group is which? The Raisa is the Rabbanah. Which one needs kavanah and which one doesn't need kavanah, if I were to say that it's only one of them?
The
Rabbanans do or don't?
Do.
Maybe which you vote? Do. Okay, so we have two votes that the Rabbanans do require kavanah. Okay, now I would say my instinct would have been to vote that way also. So why? There's actually a couple of explanations you could have for this. So why would you think so?
Because
what?
They made up the kana that way.
How do you know that?
I'm saying that's more likely.
You're saying it's more likely.
They made it that way. If it's come to one way, they would have made it that way. I don't know that they did, but
okay.
All right, so Hashem said do this, so he said do.
And the kavanah was not relevant.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that by default maybe is more likely, but there's a little bit more we could add to it. Leif, how did you come to that conclusion?
I'm thinking about Derban, I guess, lotases, or that, there are specific, most Derban lotases have specific circumstances that have to be in place before. Sorry, it's kind of hard to explain.
Well, I think you come to it from a few possible directions. Sam, do you want to fill that in?
I was going to say something else.
Okay, on a different point? That's what
I mean. It was a similar answer.
Okay, so go for it.
Just with Joe Rice mentioned, so the mitzvah, the source of the mitzvah is that it's holdos, and it's an action
An
action base, but the source for many mitzvah is to listen to.
To
listen to the chacham, and perhaps you can listen if you do something by accident.
Okay, that's actually very possibly an explanation. And that very much could be that. Zach, were you raising your hand before? Yeah?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, for Daraisa, since there's probably, a source in the Torah, so you don't really need Kavana because it's clear why you're doing it, but Darabanan, where there are, more added mitzvahs, so then you might need Kavana since, it's not really so clear why you're doing it.
So the reasoning isn't as obvious. Or maybe that's similar to what Sam is saying, that the reason is one general reason of listening to Chazal, which in this case you're not doing, because you're not doing it for that reason. So I think I would have voted with all of you on this. I think that for one reason or another, that is the more intuitive direction to go in. That we've also discussed in the past, that a number of Achronim, we discussed earlier in the year, a number of Achronim believe that Doraisas are objective realities, or what you would call Isser Chafza, or Mitzvah Chafza, the item is objectively true. So let's say Isser Doraisa, if you eat Chazer, that's an Isser Chafza, the Chazer is defined by God as spiritually harmful. While Drabanans, exactly like Sam is saying, is all about listening to Chazal, and therefore it's all about you. So the same way, the understanding of some is that if you do an Isser Drabanan Bishogeg without knowing that you're violating what Chazal said, that is nothing, as some understand. So then maybe you should say the same thing conversely, that if you don't know that a mitzvah, the Rabbanan, is a mitzvah, so then you're not doing anything. But a mitzvah min HaTorah is objectively there, as Yossi was saying, that's what the Torah described, so that exists with or without your kavanah. But the mitzvah, the Rabbanan, only exists with your kavanah. Eli, you want to add to that?
I mean, not on the action, but don't we say that can't be whatever they formulate,
Kain
and they make it into a Darabanan, and they can use one.
Kain Daraisa.
Yes.
Oh, so that's also brought in. So that's an interesting point as well. So, we'll come to that in a second. It's going to play a role in a second. So, just to give some of the textual background to this. So, like I said, logically, I agree. I think we're all on the same page here. That if we had to choose a lineup, we would say that mitzvos Darabanan require Kavana, and mitzvahs d'oraisa, maybe not. Right, that we don't necessarily require, maybe you could take the view, ein tzrichos kavanah for d'oraisas, but d'rabbanan should need, for variations of all the logic that we said, either because we are listening to Chazal, that's the whole nature, and if you're not listening to Chazal, it's nothing, or maybe because d'oraisas are there objectively, but that the Rabbanans were created with a certain mitzvah in mind, and just to connect it to something else that we learned, I recall that we mentioned that the Rugged Shavra says that our Gemara in Arvei Pesachim, when it says that if you eat matzah without tasting it, you're Yotze, but if you eat maror without tasting it, you're not Yotze. And the Rugged Shavra said that because matzah b'zman hazeh is still daraisa, so it's just objective, doesn't matter whether you connect to it or not. While maror, because it's drabanan, there's a greater need to actually experience it, because that's how they set it up. So all of that all points in the same direction, that drabanan should need more kavana than daraisa. However, coming from a textual perspective, the most well-known position on this is the Magen Avraham, that quotes the Radbaz, and the Bach also understood the Torah this way. And if you haven't got to it, I did put the Magen Avraham on the list, so you'll see it eventually. But Magen Avraham quotes the Radbaz, that makes the distinction in the opposite way. That the Oraisas do not need Kavana, but the Rabbanan, that the Raisas do need Kavana and the Rabbanans don't. So the opposite of what we all agreed upon in the past few minutes. So that's the most well-known position on this issue. But there's still a lot of room to disagree. First of all, there are many who do say it the way we said it. And the Stechemid quotes a view like that. And there are many others who have reasonings to say like that, that the Rabbanans need Kavana and the Raisas don't. And even the Radbaz, that the Magen Avraham quotes. So some later Sfarim point out they don't know where that Radbaz is. And that you can find different statements in the Radbaz that seem to say the opposite. Like we said, that the Rabbanans require more Kavanah. So basically what I'm trying to tell you here is if you get into a conversation with people with Beis Medrash and you say, oh, I think the Rabbanans should need more Kavanah than the Raisas, so I think there's a lot to back that up. But don't be surprised if the other guy in the Beis Medrash says, what are you talking about? The Magen Avraham says the opposite. So yeah, that's the more well-known mucker, is to say the opposite. But there is still a lot of logic and maybe also some sources to back up saying the way that we're saying it. Now, why would you say the opposite? Why would you say that the Raisas do need and the Rabbanans don't need? So that's presumably because you're treating the whole issue like a suffix. So as we've seen, it's a big machlokus in the Gemara, it's a machlokus in the Rishonim, and it's not clear in the later generations how we paskin. So the evidence, we'll get into probably a little bit more tomorrow, is that the Shulchan Aruch says that for Kriya Shema you should have Kavanah. So does he mean that in every sense of the word? Does he mean that as reflective of all mitzvos? Does he mean that in different senses, different levels? It's a big discussion. There's a lot that surrounds that statement. Right?
But with Kriya Shema, wouldn't you say it's sort of like a prop? It would be an exception? Because
you could say that. There's a lot of, we'll see tomorrow, we'll get into a little bit more, there's a lot of reasons to not take that as reflective of everything. You're right. So there's a lot of debate about what the Shulchan Aruch means. So one possible position, and that's where the Magen Avraham is on Hilchos Kriya Shema, is commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, that it could be that the whole issue is a suffix. So if it's a suffix, so in dealing with Torah law, we'll be machmir. And in dealing with rabbinic law, we could be makel. So that might be the issue. It doesn't necessarily conform with the lumdus of what we're discussing, but just as a matter of policy, so for dinim daraisa go the chumra, and for dinim darabana go the kula. But the logic, the lumdus that we're saying, would maybe point in a opposite direction. Hi.
If that was true, that we're acquiring kavana for Doraisas, like because of the Doraisa Chumra. So wouldn't it be the case that, like, let's say you forgot, or let's say you didn't know, you read Shema without a Kavanah or Kavanah, wouldn't you
have to do it again?
Wouldn't you be, let's say, because
is that didn't only
Dinah
Chachila?
Is Derabanan?
If you understand that way, that's another machlokas. But it could be. You really want it to get very complicated. So many Rishonim believe Safek Dereis L'Chomer is Dereis. It's really the Rambam who's probably the minority.
Mm-hmm.
But Rishonim would say 99% of all the Rishonim say it's 99%, but most of the Rishonim say Sveika Deraisa is Lachumra, Minat Torah Lachumra, it's the Rambam. And even within the Rambam, it could be that some understand the Rambam to distinguish between mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh. Why would that be? Normally you expect the Chumra to go in that direction. Why should more machmir and mitzvah saseh? Because the understanding would be that the Torah gives you a mitzvah. You're not off the hook until you're sure you did it. So if you're not sure you did it, then shouldn't you be obligated to still do it? So then one might say, okay, so then you have to keep going until you're confident. But we'll explore that a little bit more. So the halacha, so certainly at least as a matter of policy, whether this is because of the logic or as a matter of policy, halacha, Mishnah Berurah, and others assume that you should have kavana for both, for the derisas and the rabbanas. So basically what we just went through there was we're sympathetic to an approach that the rabbanas need and the derisas don't need. More common is to see the Magen Avraham who says the opposite. The derisas don't need it, the rabbanas do need it. La halacha seems that we require it for both. So what about Ilan's point? So that may be some explained because of Ilan's point. That if we were right in Svara, that maybe Daraisa should need less than Darabanas. So why is there a view that says that only that nobody needs, that Daraisa don't need and Darabanas don't need? So some suggest that maybe it's like you said, that called the ticket Rabbanan came Daraisa ticket, that logically it could have been that the Rabbanim should need more Kavana. But if the Raisas don't need, maybe for that reason Chazal didn't ask for it, because they pattern their mitzvahs after mitzvahs Daraisas. So maybe that is brought into the conversation. Okay, so a lot to process here. So we'll have to go into further detail about this tomorrow. Hi.
You wouldn't assume that they would make Kavana, which is the reason why they would be more likely than the Daraisas.
More likely to stick to the Daraisas. See,
no,
this svara was just to explain
it's
why.
To say they're more likely to do that, but it doesn't mean they're going to.
Yeah, the question is, he's trying to explain. This svara is trying to explain. So let's see if we call it Torah by mitzvah. He's trying to explain why is it that if the logic does indicate that din and rabbanan should need kavana for all of the reasons we discussed, and the ragashav and the idea that it's about listening to Chazal's instructions, so all of that would seem to indicate logically that you do need kavana for the rabbanans. So how do you explain a position that says that neither the raisas or the rabbanans need kavana? So how could that be reconciled? That was the suggestion. Well, maybe logically it could have needed kavana, but Chazal wanted to keep everything in the same pattern.
Just disagreed with,
yeah, he's saying, he's explaining the ones who say that you don't need kavana for either. So why shouldn't you need kavana based on what we said? So if it's true that the whole nature of a Rabbanan is that you're listening to Chazal, so how could you explain a position that says you don't need Kavanah for that? So one suggestion was, maybe because Kein Deraisa, that they just made their mitzvahs to pattern the Deraisas and stuck to the same rules. This is one suggestion. Okay, so a lot to recap, so let's recap quickly. Tomorrow we will have to explore further. I'll say the first source to pay attention to for tomorrow, so that we can apply this in another context, is you'll note that we haven't talked about the Rambam at all. The Rambam's position is a topic of a lot of discussion, because the Rambam seems to contradict himself as far as shofar and matzah are concerned. The Gemara connects shofar and matzah, the Rambam doesn't. Take a look at those Rambams especially, and we will discuss how that fits into this whole discussion. So just to quickly recap, what did we speak about? So we looked at the concept of negative kavana, which started from the premise that if we say mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, maybe it does not mean that kavana is irrelevant, it just means that kavana is preloaded. And if you interfere, if you change the factory settings, then indeed you would have a problem. This was a big machlokas Rishonim. Many Rishonim did acknowledge negative kavana as indeed effective in negating the mitzvah. There were a few exceptions. The Ra'ah is quoted by a number of Rishonim, the Ritva and the Beis Yosef, quotes the Ritva, quotes the Ra'ah, as saying that no, there's no such thing as negative kavana, that if you all made mitzvah, even if you're yelling and screaming, the mitzvah is still good. But many other Rishonim thought negative kavana does work, and there's a very interesting comparison of Tosfos. Tosfos in Brachos talks about having the intent to make a wrong bracha on something, and says there that negative kavana is worse than no kavana, so don't ask for mitzvah srichos kavana. And that idea of negative kavana, Tosfos was talking about a mistaken kavana. Maybe it has the same idea that you have bad kavana pushes out the good kavana, which is worse than simply having no kavana. And we noted that the Ra'ah's two unique positions could be linked, two minority positions could be linked, because he says that negative kavana doesn't make a difference, but he also says in order for your kavana to count, you have to at least know that the mitzvah is in play, you have to at least know it's Pesach when you eat matzah. So as the Pnei Yeshua notes, that leads to an interesting understanding of what the Gemara says about shofar, tokeya l'shir. So you could have thought that just means somebody is clueless and just blows shofar just for fun. But if he knows it's Rosh Hashanah, that's a part of the premise. So then that actually could mean negative kavana, meaning that he knows there's a mitzvah shofar, and he's choosing bedavka to do it for a different reason. Specifically, the two positions in the Ra'ah then would each support each other in that particular reading of the Gemara. So that's also an interesting thing to consider. So then we also went from there to say that if you have negative kavana as an option, so that could get you to conditional kavana. You can get to conditional kavana in two ways. Either you say mitzvah srichos kavana, and it's up to you whether or not to have that kind of kavana. Or you could say that mitzvah ain't srichos kavana, but it's only the default, and you can undo it. So maybe you can conditionally undo it. And we gave a couple of scenarios where that might come up. Sfiras Omer, and Kriyashma, and Kiddush, all possible cases where negative kavana might be desired, and maybe also conditional kavana. And we mentioned also that negative kavana is considered by the Rishonim as a good etza to the bracha on the Esro problem, but Lamaisa, it's not the one that we use in practice, and we'll have to discuss tomorrow why it is that that didn't make it to be the popular choice. And then we talked about how it, if we take this idea that mitzvahs could be preloaded, so is there any distinction to be drawn? Some mitzvahs more likely to be preloaded than others. And I asked you, how would you line up if I said deraisas and derabanans, one need kavana, one doesn't need kavana, what would you say? So we were all here in agreement that it seems more likely that derabanans should need kavana and deraisas maybe not. We gave various explanations, such as the idea that derabanans are about listening to Chazal, so you have to be consciously listening, and otherwise it shouldn't count for anything. And there are some sources that support our view that the Rabbanans should need, while the Raisas might not need. However, the most often quoted source says the opposite, the Magen Avraham, quoting the Rabbaz, that the Raisas do need and the Rabbanans don't need, although that Rabbaz is also not clear if that's around for us to define. So what's the logic to go that way? That's more probably a practical position, because as we'll also discuss tomorrow, the Shulchan Aruch, as far as paskening on this issue, all we know is that the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Kriyas Shema says you need to have kavana. We don't know whether that's specific or general or chachil or b'di'evit or any of the other details. So the Magen Avraham there cites the position that deraisas yes, derabanans don't. So that might just be a suffik position, that suffik deraisas l'chumra, suffik derabanan l'kula. And la halacha, Mishnah Berurah and others advocate even kavana for both, for deraisas and derabanans. And for those who go the other way and say that you don't need kavana either for deraisas or derabanans, so what about all the arguments we said that derabanans really should need kavana? So then that could be, as Elon suggested, that maybe that's a part of the idea of kol tikkun rabbanan kein deraisa tikkun, that maybe logically they could have needed, but Chazal patterned their mitzvos after the dinim of deraisa, and maybe that's where kavana wasn't required. Okay, so a lot more to say about this. Hopefully we'll make some progress tomorrow. Again, I would recommend focusing, try to get as many makoros as you can, but focus on the Rambam tomorrow, because that's where we'll start off the readings of the two Rambams and how they work together. All right, I wish you all a wonderful day. It should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.
Right,
it's not the only explanation.
you don't need any explanation. It's just that was the Torah.
It, yeah, they didn't have to agree with it. It's true. It does seem somewhat compelling, though, especially if you do say, like, the Nesivos, if you do assume, although this, I think, is something we have to explore tomorrow also, because what's interesting also overall is a lack of parallelism, especially according to the Ra'ah, right? That if you say that Yudavka or Yotze Matzah, specifically when you know and when somebody is forcing you, it's interesting how that does not parallel those sensitives at all. Because if somebody broke into your house and forced you to eat chazer, so for sure you wouldn't even have a shoke. That would be nothing. That's a total onus. Right? So as far as an avera, that would count for nothing. But as far as a mitzvah, it sounds like that counts for the whole deal. So that's something which we have to explore a little bit more. So here's another example where you could have thought it should flip. That if the idea is that a mitzvah derabanan could count even without kavana, so then why do many achronim assume that the opposite, that an avera derabanan, even just b'shogeg, which is normally a pretty high level of responsibility, but maybe for derabanan a shogeg doesn't count for anything. So then it's interesting that the inverse isn't true, that it does count even without any awareness. So it's surprising. It's not the only way to see things, but it is surprising. So one possible explanation is to call the Tikkun Rabbanan Kandari, so that they made their mitzvahs to be... But there are many who say the opposite. There are many who say it's just practice, that's true. Some say that Chazal were more machmir on their mitzvahs for that reason. So it's only an explanation within a combination of positions. Okay, Zach, how are you doing? Okay, these are among the issues. May I have a fantastic day.